Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Stevie Nicol, looking good in pink today. A little later on, Jürgen Klinsmann and Archie Rintuck will be joining us to reflect on an impressive win for Germany. The same word, of course, can't be used for Spain. They can only manage a 1-1 draw against Greece. It started well, lovely goal from Morata, but 10 minutes into the second half, they concede a controversial penalty. Stevie, did you think it was a pen?
I didn't think it was. You know, Martinez is clear on the ball. He's actually on his way down. And his follow-through, his...
Studs are high.
His stud and his leg and his boot and everything does come up. But that's inevitable because of where he's going.
Well, Bacasetas would convert the penalty and it would prove to be the equaliser. And that's how it would finish. Spain 1, Greece 1. Sweden top of the group after beating Georgia by 1-0. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Sid Lowe, to reflect on that draw between Spain and Greece. Let's start off with a penalty, Sid. For you, was it a pen?
I can see Steve's point. I can see the fact that there's no intent whatsoever. He's clearing the ball and he's very unfortunate to follow through. But in a way, maybe the best answer is to give you Martinez's own answer. You know, his only complaint after the game was that he felt that the referee was too keen to give it. He didn't actually say it wasn't. He referred to it as a mistake. He referred it to it as one moment that cost them. He didn't complain about the decision itself. And I suppose in the end, that's the answer. I'm with Steve in the sense that I kind of feel uneasy when these kind of decisions are given. I feel uneasy when a player who hasn't looked for the contact and hasn't really provoked the contact is the one that's punished for it. But as you were saying, Dan, his studs are very high and it is a full set of studs on the shin. So I guess in a way, it's inevitable that it gets given.
Greece just one shot on target, hardly any of the ball. Is this just one of those days for Spain or is it deeper problems?
Well, in a way, that's the question that I think will be asked over the next week and in particular over the next two games that Spain played. Because, look, I think we sometimes don't appreciate how difficult it is to break down a really, really defensive team, particularly a defensive team that's well organised. But I think Spain were slower in possession tonight than they've been previously. The ball didn't circulate particularly well. They weren't very fluid. They weren't very incisive. And, of course, as you say, that could be a one-off. But look back at the way they went out of the last World Cup against Russia. They had over 1,000 passes. And never really found a way through. They never really had that cutting edge. And I think that's the thing that will concern Spain. It's worth pointing out, though, at this stage, that the starting 11 tonight, 9 of those 11 started the game when they beat Germany 6-0 in November. So this isn't a team that struggles for goals, but of course it's very different types of games. That Germany team came and pressed very high, but was slow, and Spain found a way to run through them almost at will. This was a team that defended very, very, very deep. I think the positive thing from Spain's point of view is just that sense that Brian Gil, when he came on, offers them something different and is quite electric and gives them a kind of a different way of trying to open up very defensive teams, but the performance wasn't good enough.
You talked about the fact that obviously this game will be reviewed after the two remaining matches. But initially, Sid, what's the general attitude to this draw?
Well, the general attitude goes very, very much hand in hand with what I said, which is that the previous game in November is that Germany win, that 6-0. And so the response to this is a kind of, oh, there goes all our optimism then, you know, all that elation that we had. And there's been a kind of a sense of saying... And obviously, look, this is an immediate reaction. This is what's said on Spanish radio and TV immediately after the game. It's some of the things that the players have said. Just that sense that, did we get a bit too carried away with that? Did we allow ourselves to get overexcited by that? Now, look, you beat Germany 6-0, you're going to be overexcited. So I think the immediate reaction is just a sense that things need to be sped up, that there needs to be a bit more cutting edge, that there needs to be just something a little bit different. Because, of course, this idea of Spain totally dominating possession, totally dominating the game but not finding a way through is a recurring theme. Even if you can look at it and say it's difficult to do and it can be a one-off, it's a recurring theme for Spain, and that's the thing I think that makes people a little concerned about it.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN AFC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Good win for Germany today, beating Iceland by 3-0. We saw 2 goals in the opening 7 minutes, Goretzka and Havertz, and then Gundogan in the second half, Stevie.
Well, everyone he touches turns to gold, doesn't it? And no surprise, he scores again in a Germany jersey.
Let's welcome in, shall we, Jürgen Klinsmann and Archie Rintuck to reflect on that victory for Germany. Jürgen, they made it look very easy today.
Yeah, they made it look really easy. But when you're up 2-0 after a couple of minutes, that makes life much, much easier. It was a very impressive first half by Germany, really totally in control. Iceland came back a bit after halftime. They gave it a bit of a fight. But then Ilkay Gundogan, he kind of shut them down with the third goal. A beautiful goal by him. And he's, as Stevie said rightfully, he's not stopping scoring, you know, if it's for Man City or now with Germany. Very impressive performance. I think on the base of not playing with a real number nine, Timo Werner was on the bench. So they kind of moved Goretzka up into their fake number nine here and there. Sané stayed on the left. Gnabry came from the right. Havertz was floating all over. Beautiful goal by him. But the real kind of chief of the game was Joshua Kimmich, playing as a number six there for Germany. He's playing it in a way like a modern number 10 almost. Very, very impressive to see. So a good performance by Germany.
Archie, you're obviously at the game. What was your big takeaway from it?
No result that Germany were going to get here tonight was going to make up for what happened against Spain in their last game of 2020. But I think that this was the perfect reaction. Those were different circumstances when they lost 6-0 to Spain. Now the first game that Germany have had since it was announced that Joachim Löw will be stepping down after this tournament coming up, the Euros, I think that this was exactly what he would have wanted to see. And also throws up a few questions, for example. You look at the way that Joshua Kimmich played here, as Jürgen is rightly praising. One person who will be sitting at home and wondering what does this mean for me is Toni Kroos. Mm. Because with that midfield trio of Ilkay Gundogan, Joshua Kimmich and Leon Goretzka, Germany look very dynamic. And Toni Kroos has many positive facets to his game. One thing I would say that he does less well is tracking back. And that was something that Germany did exceedingly well tonight. When Leroy Sané is putting his body about on the line at 2-0 up, those are good signs for Joachim Löw.
And what does this mean for Toni Kroos, Jürgen?
No, it means that there's a real competition going on now, going into these European Championships this summer. Obviously, there's still kind of the name Thomas Müller floating around. If Thomas Müller comes back, you know, If he decides to bring him back, you know, he tries to steal another spot. I think Ilkay Gundogan over the last 6 months made it clear that he wants to be a fixture, a real fixture in this German national team, playing well for club and when he gets a chance to play for his country. So obviously Toni Kroos is Toni Kroos. I mean, he's a World Cup winner. He's playing for Real Madrid and he has a big standing, you know, in that team. But there will be a lot of competition going into the European Championships this summer. And that's only good for Jürgen Löw.
Archie, over the last couple of years, we've talked about the fans falling out of love with the German national teams, low TV ratings, of course, very much emphasising that. Is that starting to change at all?
Surprised you didn't make a falling out of love joke there, Dan.
Well, no, Archie, I'm above that. That sort of nonsense.
It's about the only thing you're above. Anyway, I would say that the TV ratings over here, they had, as you mentioned, they had really fallen. And this kind of display, that first 10 minutes, the way that they were playing, you saw it even in the warm-up, they were just playing some one-touch and they were looking sharp. And when you have that buy-in axis there that we saw in the build-up to the first two goals, completely in the build-up to the first goal with Kimmich playing it over the top to Gnabry and Goretzka scoring. All that was missing was Robert Lewandowski in that scenario as well. So I think that they're in a good place, and I think that there's a much better chance with Joachim Löw now leaving. I think that for all that he'd given, there was not much respect anymore for what he was doing. I think that Germany had fallen out of love with Joachim Löw's football, which is harsh given the fact that he'd won them a World Cup. But the way that the team had grown stale, it became more about the image that the team was giving off. And I think that once they get back down to the football and get back to winning games, as they are likely to do quite a lot of the time, because look at that squad that they've got. When Marc-Andre ter Stegen is sitting on the bench, you have good problems. Mm. Then I think that Germany are going to be in a good position going into these Euros, even if they do have a very difficult group.
Jürgen, just take us into the insight slightly of why Jürgen Löw saying that he will leave at the end of the Euros, why that makes a difference psychologically for everyone.
Well, with that message that Joachim Löw gave now, his players, the federation, and especially all the German fans, the responsibility now is on the shoulder of the players. Now, the players now have to come out and prove a point. You know, the coach will leave after the Euros. Now, the players need to prove it in terms of the disaster from Russia 2018 is still somewhere there in the back of their minds, especially by the fans. The players, they are obligated now to deliver. They are obligated to give everything they have, you know, and being extremely hungry and willed to play very, very good football in these European championships. And when you talk about good football for a German fan, it means you got to win the European championship. That's the expectations that, unfortunately, kind of when you win the World Cup four times and the European championships three times, that's what people then expect. So it's down to the players now. So the reaction has to come from them. They have to show the hunger to win it. And they own it also a little bit themselves.
Archie, as you're on, I've got to talk about your Twitter thread today. I'm a bit worried you have a little bit too much time on your hands. Yeah. This is a man who documented pretty much everything that Erling Haaland did at the weekend in that 2-2 draw, including the number of times that he touched his nose, the number of times he swore, his body language, the whole shebang. And of course, the big talking point away from how bored you must be is the fact that you were there to witness exactly what happened after the match and how frustrated he was.
Yeah, after the game, what he did was he just took off his shirt, threw it at Köln's Jorge Murray, who had been tasked with marking him throughout the game and had obviously asked Haaland for his shirt with 10 minutes to go. And you're thinking, if this is the attitude that you're taking as Haaland's opponent, then he's going to probably score a few against you. I think you probably need to be a bit tougher in the face of that. But yeah, he wasn't happy, but he wasn't happy at halftime when he said some words that I can't repeat here, talking about the fact that he'd had enough of this. He couldn't take it, is the polite way of putting it. The reason I chose to watch him, Dan, is because this is a guy who we are going to see a lot of in the coming years, and he is an exceptional talent, and it's interesting to see how he develops now. He is still very young. You can still see that he's letting out a lot of emotion, and just watching him up close, you see how good his movement is. And actually, to be honest, it was probably more interesting just to watch Haaland instead of watching the whole game itself.
Jürgen, do you mind this sort of attitude?
No, I don't mind that at all. First of all, as he's rightfully said, I mean, he's young and he will now, over the next couple of years, become more mature, maybe here and there a bit calmer. But he shows those emotions, also frustrations. It's all right. It's all right because it's part of an entire team environment. So now the question is a little bit, okay, if you overreact, you know, maybe you make some comments to your teammates or you freak out maybe and throw a shoe against the wall in the locker room, you know, who kind of talks to him then? Is it the coach? Is it your teammate? I mean, in case of Borussia Dortmund, I would say it's probably Emre Can or Mats Hummels. Then they take him a little bit on the side and say, hey, youngster, we understand your frustration, but come on, but you're also part of the team. But that's the maturing process. He will go through it. Now, the negative side of everything is a little bit that the opponents watch that as well. You know, when you watch a player losing it a little bit too fast, you know, then you can make sure that the next game you play against him is that they provoke that element in that player and maybe get you to a yellow or maybe even a red card. So, but I like it that he has those emotional reactions. I like it that he has that hunger and that he's not happy with going off the field with a 2-2 draw. Even if he scores both goals, he wants more.
Archie, are we in a situation where it's simple? If Borussia Dortmund qualify for the Champions League, he stays. If they don't, he leaves.
I think the likelihood of that happening is as you say, if they don't make the Champions League. That is the feeling, and that is why this game that Dortmund have, also on the 3rd of April, the same day that RB Leipzig play Bayern, earlier that day, it's Borussia Dortmund against Eintracht Frankfurt, and Dortmund are 5 points behind Frankfurt. Now, I don't see a guy who is chucking it in. He wants to win every single game. And it's not about him. You see him celebrating every teammate's goals as hard as he celebrates his own. as the lights go off here. So let's see what happens in that game, first of all. But I think the way you put it is probably the truth.
And is that right for his career, Jürgen?
I don't know. I mean, he is still very young. And now he feels like being really part of something in Dortmund. You know, the players are kind of in sync with him. It's a good flow. They know how to play the balls into him, especially Giovanni Reyna. They have a blind understanding. Marco Reus as well. So he's in a good spot right now. I'm also not sure if Borussia Dortmund is willing to sell him, even if obviously we're talking a huge chunk of money here. But Borussia Dortmund maybe has, even if they get into a situation where they have to sell a player financially, there are two, three other names as well, Sancho or even Reyna, that could come into the discussion. I mean, for Borussia Dortmund to let him go somewhere else would be a big, big issue.
Jürgen Archie, as always, thank you very much. As Archie mentioned, some big games in the first week back after the international break. Eintracht Frankfurt against Borussia Dortmund, plus it's Leipzig against Bayern Munich. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. As expected, an easy win for England puts them top of Group I after defeating San Marino by 5-0. Let's welcome in, shall we, Nadim Anua and Don Hutchinson, to reflect on that. I say reflect on that game. Nadim, is there anything we take away from this?
No. I think it's one of those games where everybody knew England were probably going to win. I think there would have been more questions asked if maybe they conceded a goal and so on. But I think it was an exercise for Southgate to be able to try a few players out, see what the combinations are like. And I think you'll probably see a slight change in team should the game on Sunday go ahead and the game after that. So it was a weird one. You know, the games where you do want to watch, but then the fact of the matter is, you know, what are you really going to try and get from it? And yeah, those some players there got a chance to have a run out. They did what they needed to do. It was business as usual. And England continue overall with what's been a good run for the past few years. But like I say, it was a tough game to watch because it was essentially so one-sided. But you know, you can't necessarily pick your opponent when you're qualifying. So credit to them. They're top of the table and hopefully they stay there.
Don, England, favourites to win the Euros in the summer. What are you laughing?
You beat San Marino 5-0 and now you're favourites.
No, we were favourites before that, but let's not get into...
Oh, really?
They are...
What, before Germany?
Yes.
Belgium?
Yes.
France?
Yes.
Portugal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm not lying. That's fact. England are the favourites to win the Euros ahead of Belgium and France. So on that point, Don, is anything but a win this summer a failure for Gareth Southgate's side?
Well, I mean, probably not, because I've not got them favourites. I've no idea who's put them above rank number one in the world, Belgium. So I've got no idea how that works.
The bookies, Don.
Well, how can the bookies have England number one when Belgium are ranked number one in the world? How does that work?
Well, this is how the bookies see it. That's it. That's
well,
fact.
The bookies are wrong. Well, lump on England.
Right.
Get your money on England. And watch you lose yourself some power. Hey, by the way, some notable mentions, by the way. Raheem Sterling had the armband tonight. Ollie Watkins, you know, you follow his career and look what he's done all the way back since his Exeter days and when he was playing non-league football. Dominic Calvert-Lewin with a brace tonight. So, joking aside, there were some good performances. But, yeah, it was a routine win.
I didn't ask you about the game, Don. I asked if they're going to win the Euros.
Well, no.
Nathan, what is success? What is success for this English side this summer?
So, because they got to the semi-finals of a World Cup, and now they're at the Euros, and the semi-finals and the final of the Euros are in England. I think if they're not thinking about winning the tournament, then I think they're essentially missing the point. They've got a really good squad, good young squad. So many possibilities, a really great opportunity to be able to bring people in and out. Like, it's hard to pick a starting 11. Mm. And, you know, this is one of them. Like, that's the team which I would go for. But you're thinking, do I go for this person? Do I go for that person? That on paper is a good team. In fact, I think it's a very good team, especially for the teams that are around right now. But as we've seen historically with England, a good team on paper doesn't necessarily guarantee success. But to be able to be hosting so much of the Euros this summer, I think they honestly believe that they've got a good opportunity. And looking at that team,
yeah,
I think if you go through 1 to 11, you're not going to be finding many teams who have a far better team than that. So I think they have to be hopeful. Belgium, obviously, you know, they're the number one ranked team in the world, so you can disregard what the bookmakers say on this particular instance. But I think on any given day, England could beat anybody, especially in the Euros, and especially if they manage to play those games in familiar surroundings. So I don't know if they will win it, but this is probably the best chance that I've seen them have in my entire lifetime. Maybe Don would agree with me on that.
Go on, Stevie. Is that team good enough to win the Euros?
Do you know, I think England can put a team out that could beat anybody.
Right.
I don't think that's really the question. The question is, can England's players and coaching staff handle the expectation? Because they went to the World Cup and nobody gave them a chance of doing anything. And all of a sudden, they're in the semis and it's, my goodness, they've actually got a chance of winning this thing. Now it's completely gone the other way, and historically, England and the players and the coaches collapse when there's any sort of expectation on them. So I don't think it's a case of, can England put a team out that's capable of beating everybody? It's, what's going to happen upstairs? Can they take the pressure? I'm not so sure they can.
Is there a difference to this generation, Don? Do you think they can handle that pressure?
I think they can. I think they're good enough. They're a good side. What I would say, just to counteract that, and I don't know if it means anything, you know, it's always fun when you're writing down a possible England 11, but when you look at Portugal's, you know, they're putting three players for every position, the same as France. I mean, France's squad and the pool of players they're picking from is ridiculous. Some of them can't even make the squad. But when you look at what Gareth Southgate's got to work with, I mean, some of the brightest young talent at the top end of the pitch, I've seen England, you know, play for a long time or potentially play for a long time. I mean, unbelievable talent. So if he goes for it and he's, you know, he sacrifices maybe that clean sheets are not going to be his bag and maybe he gives one goal away, at the top end of the pitch, there's some serious goals in them.
Boys, as always, thank you very much. Be sure to check out Extra Time with Nathan, Don and Stevie over on our YouTube channel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Italy kicked off their qualifying campaign with a comfortable 2-0 victory over Northern Ireland. It puts them at top of the table alongside Switzerland. Let's welcome Gab Marcotti into the show. Gab, your big takeaway from Italy's win today?
I'm going to use a cliche here and say it's a marathon, not a sprint. So 3 games in 8 days is a game changer. National team coaches aren't used to it. You've seen it, obviously, with other teams as well. They mix things up. That's what Roberto Mancini did. We saw a very good first 45 minutes. I thought And then early in the second half, they said, all right, let's go and manage the lead. And what they don't do well is when they start managing the lead, they play 2 miles an hour, low tempo. And I think they ran a few risks, notwithstanding the fact that maybe they could have added a third later. So all in all, you take the 3 points, you're happy with the first half, and you move on.
Gab, how close is this team to the one that we're going to see the starting 11 at the Euros?
I mean, I think maybe half the team. I mean, I'd be surprised if Chiellini starts at the Euros. I think Emerson Palmieri's had so many chances down the left. I think it's going to be Spinazzola, who, of course, came on in the second half. I think Jorginho, it's not guaranteed he's going to start. Obviously, he was absent and he missed them. I think Barella is going to obviously be in there in midfield. I'm holding out for Zaniolo, and I would expect that, you know, again, Chiesa is another guy who should be starting, but, you know, if Berardi plays like that, it could get a little bit tricky. So I'd say about maybe 50% there, but there is a lot of competition, legitimate competition, I think, for places.
Away from international news, some interesting stuff from Juve Vice President Pavel Nedved coming out and talking about their coach. Pirlo is and will be the Juventus coach. That's 100% sure. We have begun a new project with him, knowing we would face difficulties. Pirlo has everything to become a great coach. Not only did he talk about Pirlo, but also the future of Cristiano Ronaldo. As far as I'm concerned, Ronaldo is untouchable. He has a contract until June 2022 and will stay. We'll see what happens after that. On both a technical and marketing level, Cristiano gave us a boost towards the Olympus of football. He scored more than 100 goals in 120 matches. And besides, he dragged us into the Champions League. So, Gab, you've got Pavel Nedved coming out and saying this. So that's it, isn't it? That's story done. Why does this story keep reappearing?
So I think the story keeps reappearing for several reasons. I mean, if you're talking about Pirlo, you know, while that is part of the project, as I've been telling you all year, it is a transition season. This is the direction of travel. Whether Pirlo can take them there or not remains to be seen. But should something go awfully wrong, where Juve finish out of the top four or something, or something close to that, or then I think they would make a different choice. But they are committed to this project. There's not, that part's not in question. As for Cristiano, yeah, it's all fine and good. I think the reality is that if Cristiano wants to stay, he's going to stay at least until the end of his contract. He's come out and he said that he wants to stay. At some point, though, with his contract expiring, they're going to have to figure out whether they want to extend it. He's going to have to figure out whether he wants to stay. So I think it's hugely likely he's going to stay another year after that. And I think Nedved hinted as this is anybody's guess. What bugs me a little bit is bringing up all this stuff about the past. He scored this many goals. Nobody's attacking Cristiano Ronaldo on the basis that, you know, he hasn't been productive for Juve. He has. And in fact, this season has been his best season for Juve. The question is, post-COVID, with the new financial landscape, does it make sense for Juve to extend his deal? Does he still make financial sense to carry him in the team? You know, that is a question for the club accounts, probably not for Pavel Nedved. But for my money, he's not going anywhere, at least until the end of next season.
Sid Lowe has been waiting patiently back with us now. Sid, is this just the Spanish media getting excited about nothing?
Well, look, you asked the question there to Gab, why does this story keep re-emerging? One of the reasons it keeps re-emerging is because there's absolutely no doubt that it does Cristiano Ronaldo, from his point of view at least, no harm for it to keep re-emerging. It does him no harm to find out whether Real Madrid are interested. I think that it's an idea that certainly if you look, and you know, this is partly about bylines. Certainly if you look at which particular journalists it is writing about Cristiano Ronaldo's interest to come back, this has come, at least some of it has come, some of the reaction to it at least has come from Cristiano Ronaldo's camp. So there's no doubt that at the very least, it's handy for him to find this out. It's handy for him to know this, which isn't the same as saying that he goes, but it is the same, I think, as saying it's something that has a degree of substance to it, which, as I say, isn't to say that he's going. And I think that's why it keeps re-emerging, because there are people involved here who see the value in it re-emerging. And then, of course, what happens is it takes on a dynamic all of its own. It takes on a momentum of all of its own. And then we do get to that point that you just made, Dan, which is this just a kind of a sense of excitement in the Spanish media? Well, once you've lifted the lid, yeah, then it starts running.
Sid Lowe, thank you very much. Gab, as you're here, I just want your reaction to another quote that Nedved talking about the future of Dybala, saying, "We've missed Dybala. I don't think he's played more than 800 minutes this season. He has 1 year left in his contract, and I have nothing to add to what Paratici and Agnelli have already said. Juventus will evaluate every opportunity in the market." What is that market for Dybala?
It's a good question because you wonder what Dybala you're getting. But certainly with a year left on his contract, theoretically, he should be a heck of a lot cheaper if somebody wants to take a punt on him. You know, he's not on enormous wages. He never ended up signing that big extension for Juventus, which is why, you know, he's coming, which is why he's just a year away from free agency. I think it's a tough one. I think Juventus are going to make him, you know, a bit of a low ball offer, perhaps with bonuses to keep him around. Because they know that if they put him on the market this summer, the way things are going, they're probably not going to get full whack, and yet they have to extend him. Could he have helped Juve this season? Probably. Although at the same time, Cristiano is most productive playing with a guy like Alvaro Morata, who plays completely differently from Dybala. So. I think that's a question, that's a tough one, and that's something that Juve are going to have to consider. Their best case scenario is Dybala comes back, plays some games, shows that he's fit, shows that he can be productive, and that's going to help you make a decision on whether you want to extend his contract and to what degree you want to extend it.
Thank you very much, Gab. If you want more from Gab, be sure to download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which is available now.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. But if you want more, fear not. Extra Time is next. Nadim, Don and Stevie here to answer some of your tweets. More questions about pre-match meals, Stevie.
I hope not.
Stay tuned. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Stevie Nicol with me here in the studio. Why are you smiling?
That was something I was thinking of.
Nadim and Don are with us as well. Nadim, what's happened to your background? What's happened to all the trinkets behind you, the guitar? Are you moving?
No, not quite yet. Until I get a contract, you do. I'm not going to Connecticut, my friend.
Oh, not quite yet. Love it here. It's a lovely place.
Everybody's getting chopped up.
I've got a long way to go before that point.
Why have you got a blank canvas behind you now?
It's just because, you know, I was sick and tired of you talking about the props. I want you to listen to what I say, not look at the things around me, and you're easily distracted.
That's what it comes down to. Speaking of easily distracted, congratulations to Kay. She had a baby yesterday, baby Romeo or Romeo, depending what side of where you're from. Baby's good, mum's good. Congratulations to her. Just found out Kante now has to miss the next few matches because of a hamstring injury. Why should players keep risking their career over international breaks? He was just getting back into his world-class form. Don.
Well, it happens all the time, doesn't it? I mean, players are not going to turn down playing for their country and trying to amass as many caps as they can. It's just unfortunate. It happens. Fans absolutely hate it. They look at their star players going away and playing for their countries, and they're always dreading the injuries. And if Conte's picked up a bad one, that's a real blow for Chelsea fans.
Are we ever going to get to the stage, Stevie, that clubs are going to say, nope, we pay these players all of these wages?
I don't think we'll get that far, because for some reason, the countries have so much power. I mean, I'm shocked at the amount of power that they have, considering the amount of money that the clubs not only pay for the players, but actually pay them as well. So I guess the answer is no, I don't think it's going to change. But if I'm a club owner, I'm not a happy camper.
Yeah, Nathan, these are their prized assets. They pay a lot of money for these players.
Yeah, they do, but you know, how long is a player going to stay at a club for? And at the end of the day, when you go out there, there's always a risk of injury, whether that's going out to training, whether that's just getting out of bed in the morning. It's not a guarantee that if you go on international duty, you'll get hurt. And I think it becomes amplified because, as I say, you're not going on international duty, say, 40 times in a season, and it can be frustrating. But the fact is, if a player goes away on international duty, does well for his country, comes back with loads of confidence, does well for the team, then everything's great. But it's one of those things where if something goes wrong, you know, everybody's unhappy, but these moments are so rare. And if you look at how many players go away, the numbers coming back injured are probably very, very low.
Do you know, Dan, from a coach's point of view, it's not the injuries that you're actually thinking about, to be honest. It's all the other stuff. You know, all the travelling. You know, the different, are they going to warm up properly? Everything changes. Time differences. These are all the things that affect every single player. Yes, some do get injured, but every single player gets affected by those things. And so when they come back 2 days before a game, what sort of condition are they in for the next game? That's as big a concern as any.
Nathan?
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve, but I think there's a thing where, as a manager, I think you trust your players, and the players that a manager can rely on, they'll try and do everything the right way that they can when they go on international duties. Obviously, freak injuries and stuff do happen, but with the travelling and stuff like this, as a player, you're being told by your own medical team at your club, you're here, take this, here, take that for recovery, take this to drink, try and do this day. You know, it's a real joint effort. So for as much as you lose some level of control by having them outside the building, firstly, you do trust the player, and secondly, the international teams tend to work alongside medical staff elsewhere as well. So it's not like it's two complete separate worlds. But I don't know, Steve, maybe it's a control thing for you, but I kind of get it. And overall, I think most players do have a lot of good care when they do leave their clubs.
It's definitely a control thing. You just don't trust your players.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's always two or three you go, I know what he's going to be up to when he's away.
Right.
There's always two or three.
What would they be up to, Steve?
Things they shouldn't be doing.
Naughty things.
Naughty things.
Naughty. What were you up to?
Things they shouldn't be doing. That's why I know.
Don, it's your token percentage question. What percent chance do you give San Marino scoring a goal in World Cup qualifying?
I mean, surely they've got to score one, haven't they? The group that they're in.
Yep.
Surely they've got to score a goal. 100%.
Wow.
Oof.
God.
Come on. Wow. Got to score a goal. Come on.
Ooh.
Nathan, do you think Danny Ings is an ideal replacement for Kun Aguero next season, or does Pep have to go for Erling Haaland?
I don't think he has to go for Haaland, but I wouldn't necessarily compare Danny Ings to Sergio Aguero. I think as far as Aguero goes, he's one of one. What he's done for the club and what he's done in the Premier League has been amazing. And Danny Ings is a very good goal scorer, but there's more that comes to it. And for me, I think in this instance now, the way City are, they're probably evolving to the point where they don't need a true number nine every week of the season. So the person that they bring in, they have to fit the system. Maybe Haaland will fit the system, maybe Ings can fit the system, but I wouldn't be saying that it's a like-for-like replacement if you bring in Ings for Aguero. And the fact of the matter is, at this moment, if Ings was here, maybe he wouldn't be playing anyway.
Don, interesting question, because I don't know what your answer will be. Other than Klopp and Guardiola, who is the highest ranked manager in the Premier League?
Oof, I think Carlo Ancelotti has to be in the conversation, hasn't he? The trophies that he's won, the clubs that he's managed. I think he certainly has to be in there.
Still now, still now?
I think so. I think so. I think he's ahead of Mourinho. I think Klopp and Pep are way out on their own in terms of the Premier League and probably in Europe. But I think Carlo has to come to that conversation.
Nathan?
It just depends what the parameters are, because I agree with Don in terms of what he's saying. But then if you go off history, like to have a Jose Mourinho in the league, even though he's not doing much right now, he still has a significant back catalogue of success. So you can't necessarily disregard that. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Spurs won the League Cup, even though they've not been playing well to that point, because you have a guy who can win one particular game at any point. So, yeah, Carlo Ancelotti, Jose Mourinho. We can't even, for Premier League history, we can't even disregard someone like a David Moyes as well. These are people who have done well in the league for lots of years and been successful managers there. So it's tough. But then also with Jurgen Klopp, their team's sitting in seventh place right now. So as good as they were in the past, they're not really doing much now.
So Klopp's so not a top. He's not a top manager anymore. He's lost it. Is that what you're saying?
Listen, that's what you. That sounds like that's what you're saying.
No, that's exactly what I heard. Like what I said, seventh is over. Flash in the pan, sack him.
Listen, at your age, you should be able to hear clearly, and that is not what I said. So, if we talk about the past, there's tons of managers in the league who have that history.
But what if we were to say, if there was going to be Nadim FC, who would you want to be the coach mm-hmm. of that team that isn't Pep or Jurgen Klopp?
Apart from Pep,
yeah,
that isn't. Right now, I would say Thomas Tuchel. I would say him right now.
He's okay. Yes. Okay. All right.
What would you do?
Brendan?
You'd have Brendan, Don?
I think so. Unless you're saying you can have as much money as you like and you'd go out and spend ridiculous amounts of money on wages. But in terms of a job that someone's been doing over the years, again, I think Brendan Rodgers would be a good candidate.
Stephen?
Carlo Ancelotti.
Yeah, you'd have Ancelotti.
Absolutely, yeah. He's had the biggest clubs. He's had clubs that have been trying to get better, the likes of Napoli. Now
he's not exactly Everton. Setting Everton on fire, though, is he?
What, do you think Everton's the players that Everton have? Listen, coaches can only do so many things. At the end of the day, the results a lot of the time come down to the ability you have on the field. And let's be honest, Everton don't have the greatest of players, do they? I certainly don't think so. I would have Ancelotti outside those two.
Stevie, with an August the 14th start for the Premier League, will the players returning from the Euros be rested enough?
No. Not at all.
Most of them will be, aren't they? When's the final? July 11th?
Well, the problem is, in a normal season, you could probably say, yeah, that would be enough. Four weeks. Because the truth is, for the last whatever years before the pandemic, players weren't getting 4 weeks. So under normal circumstances, I would say yes. The problem is they've got such a backlog in the legs before the Euros.
Right.
That's why I wonder whether for the players that go all the way, whether four weeks is going to be enough.
What do you think, Don?
It's a hard one because, you know, if you start giving the players what they probably deserve, and that's probably 6 or 7 weeks, how long does it then take them? You know, to get into pre-season, you need a month of pre-season, probably 3 weeks at least, to get back up to speed. The players I watch now are just so fit, it's untrue. They probably don't even need that. You know, when we saw them come back in the summer, there was no signs of players being jaded. They're only missing for, 2 or 3 weeks in the summer. So I think you're looking at players now that are just so conditioned and so fit, and they're just, you know, they're just churning out games after games after games. And when you like that, and when you are playing to your peak fitness, you'd be surprised how many games you can actually play in a row. So I think a month is probably just about right. Of course, you'd love more, but it's how you squeeze them in. And, you know, don't forget, we've got the World Cup to sort of look forward to after that, which is going to be a December/January 1 as well, which is going to be ridiculously hard to fit in.
Final question. Since yesterday we were talking about pre-game meals, what is your favourite pre-game meal? This is this discussion you and Sebi were talking about your diet yesterday.
No, well, eventually my pre-game meal was what it should have been. It was a large amount of pasta with a little bit of sauce on it.
Right. What was it before?
Before, it was all kinds of nonsense.
Like?
Day before would be sausage and mash, fish and chips.
Nice.
Game day could be anything from a boiled egg to a plate of soup.
Right.
I mean,
sausage and mash.
And what are you drinking on game day?
Oh, nice cup of tea.
Right. And you'd have that at half time as well, yeah?
Ah, yeah. Yeah, when they started bringing all the physios and all the people telling you about hydration, the whole thing. So I walk in the dressing room with Sheffield Wednesday and I sit down with a cup of tea and the doc comes over and goes, "What are you doing drinking a cup of tea?" I said, "I like a cup of tea at half time." He went, "You're dehydrating yourself." I went, "Away you go and leave me alone."
Don, what was your pre-match meal?
Mine was pretty basic, something like an omelette.
Right.
I hated the morning kickoffs, you know, something like Weetabix in the morning for a 12:30 kickoff is as much as I could get in. But it takes me back to a story when I signed for Liverpool and Stevie was there, obviously. And I was going to make my debut at Notts County away in a cup. And I was so nervous. It was my first away trip. And the lads were down at sort of 6 o'clock having dinner. And correct me if I'm wrong, Stevie, the sort of menu was soup or melon for starters. And I think it was like omelette or pasta for main course. So I've sort of said to Stevie and John Barnes and Rushy, who were sitting there, Ronnie Moran was going around with a sort of taking the order, just chalking them off. And he was getting close to me. And I said to Stevie and the boys, went, what do I order? And the boys just went, order what you want. Like, what do you really want? Just tell Ronnie, like, just tell him what you want. So he come all the way around and he got to me and he went, "Don, what do you want? Or Hutch, what do you want?" And I've gone, "Prawn cocktail and a well-done steak, please." And Ronnie Moran hit the roof. Prawn cocktail and a steak? You're from Gateshead, man. You've never seen a prawn cocktail in your life. And he's gone mentally, went, "You're having melon and you're having pasta." And he just moved on to the next one. I was devastated.
We did the same. We had a goalkeeper. His name was Steve Grizovic. He was 6'6". He was like a man mountain.
Right.
Right. And he was the nicest, biggest guy you've ever seen. And his first trip, same thing. He sat down and he wasn't sure what. He said, "You know, what can we order?" So somebody said, "Hey, whatever you want." So, of course, all the staff and all the players are all sitting there and the guy's going around taking the orders. And he said, "What would you like?" And he said, "I'll have a chocolate milkshake." And the manager stood up and went, "What, you think you're on your holidays or something?" Big oggy chocolate milkshake.
Nadim?
For me, it's just whatever was available. I reached a point where I realised that it didn't really affect my performance as long as I just didn't eat too much of what it was there. So people are looking at the brown pastas and things like that. But it just didn't.
The bar was so low, it didn't matter what you ate.
Essentially, yeah. As long as I could run, that was it. You know what I mean? Like, if it didn't take my legs away. But I could tell you a story, though. The weirdest pre-match meal I saw, though, was a guy who was playing with when I was at City. And he used to get a bowl of cornflakes and he used to pour tea into it. And then eat it like that. And it's, to this day, one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
Wow.
And you see it and you're stunned, but yeah, I don't get it. Not for me, though.
Who was it?
Not for me at all.
Yeah, who was it?
Who was it?
It was a guy called Christian Noguri. He didn't really have a big impact at City. He probably had a few issues dealing with things like that entering his mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's not a great start off, is it?
God, that sounds awful.
Aye.
Oh, even you wouldn't do that, would you?
No.
No.
No chance.
Mince you'd have.
I love mince. Yeah. Mince and cornflakes, yeah.
Mince and cornflakes.
Not tea cornflakes.
That's it. Thank you very much. ESPN FC returns to your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.